Welcome to another edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm Neil Rosen with a cold this week, and I'm joined by, as always, Bill Bregoli.
I have nothing.
Bill McCuddy.
Let's make podcasts great again.
And sitting in with us, Mike Sargent this week.
Hello, everybody.
There you go. That's very enthusiastic.
The Quiet Storm.
All right. Here's what we're talking about this week. We're going to be talking about the new Mel Gibson movie, Hacksaw Ridge. We're going to be talking about a movie called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. We're going to be talking about Sausage Party, which is coming on demand and on DVD. That's an animated, raunchy movie voiced by a lot of people. We're going to be talking about Arrival. And we're going to be talking about Billy. Did I say Billy Lynn's Long
Halftime Walk? Yeah, you did.
I'm going to say it again.
It's almost too much show.
It's too much show. All right, let's start talking about Hacksaw Ridge. Bill Bregoli, I am the only one in the room who did not see this yet. Why don't you tell me and the audience what this is about?
Sure. I saw it, and Bill saw it, and
I saw
Mike
it too.
Mike Sargent. We all saw it together, sort of. And it's based on the true story of a conscientious objector. Actually, he was a Seventh-day Adventist, and his name was Desmond Doss. He's a Southerner. And he falls in love with a local girl, but the war breaks out, and he feels he should go, but he doesn't want to carry a gun. There's a flashback early in the film where he beats his brother within an inch of his life and gets the bejesus scared out of him in more ways than one. And he decides to become very religious, wants to join up.
Don't ruin it for me now.
Yes, well, he's...
No, this is pretty much all in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, this is the first 5 minutes. Then he joins up, and then he goes to basic training and tells his master sergeant, who's the only American actually in the movie, is Vince Vaughn, and tells him, no, I'm not going to carry a gun. He gets court-martialed, and... I don't know if we'd probably leave it there. Well, he gets to fight. He gets to go to war.
Well, he becomes a medic, and I mean, the story that's interesting is he and I'm not giving anything away. He saves a lot of people on the battlefield because he won't raise a gun. And Gibson got the story. When you watch this movie, you just go, I don't know if you guys had the same feeling. Why haven't we seen this movie before? This is an incredible story,
sure.
And it turns out that. Mel, the guy didn't want the story told.
No,
Mel kind of coaxed it out of him.
He did.
The guy's still alive?
Yeah.
No, he died about 2007, I think.
2007. Oh, so up until his death, he did not want.
Right.
What? He's that,
there
much,
actually
of a,
is
that much of a humble guy? That
he is that he, much of a humble guy. Humble. And but there's also interviews that were done with him a few years before his death where he really kind of recounted everything that he had never told all these years, which is what Mel Gibson went from. I thought that this was a great film. I think that Mel Gibson, you know, all his personal issues aside, is a great filmmaker. I think he has a great sense of drama, a great sense of where to place the camera, a great sense of, you know, picking great actors for the role. Vince Vaughn, I thought, this is probably the best thing I've seen him do in about 15 years.
So who's Vince Vaughn in the movie?
He's the drill sergeant. And he's not mugging throughout the film.
No, you know, he's great. He's a great...
He's not doing his Vince Vaughn sarcastic, snappy thing.
It's a revelation. It's sort of like seeing when we saw George Clooney in... what was that Steven Soderbergh film?
Which one? Is it all of them?
Vince Vaughn could play it straight. I mean, as bad as the remake of Psycho was, I mean, Vince Vaughn did play it.
Wow,
you know,
it's hard to believe that was Vince Vaughn. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, he can get
this
rid of
this is
that,
Mel Gibson's best movie, I think.
Better than Braveheart?
I call it Braveheart. It's about one guy that we care about more than we cared about the Braveheart story.
All right, so how did Mel Gibson get this? I mean, since he's so hated in Hollywood, how did he get it done? Because we know that The Last Temptation of Christ came from a lot of,
Well, first of all, he's got all the money in the world. He can do whatever he wants.
Well,
he does, and he talked about this at the...
Does he have all the money in the world?
Yeah, we spent some time with him at this Q&A the other night.
Right, and he talked about the fact that this is essentially an independent film.
Yeah.
He shot it independently. It was independent money. He didn't have Hollywood. He shot the whole thing. I don't want to give anything away,
but
there's a giant battlefield sequence, and he shot it like on a farm somewhere.
The size of a football field, which looks like it's 100 acres. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Does it look convincing? Does it look like a
battle? Oh, yeah.
In fact, for me, I thought the battle scenes were the best part of the movie.
Yes.
I think it slows down a bit when they're not at battle.
I think the love story is really strong.
It's very strong.
I think the whole movie...
All right, so
I like the love story
Let me ask you this. You all love the film. Hollywood, since he made this absolutely independently on his own,
absolutely,
is all forgiven Mel Gibson?
No.
Is he going to be there
all
in
is
the
not
Oscars?
First of all, he's got this crazy beard that I came this close to telling him, you got to lose that beard.
Yeah, but
beard.
He's doing that. He's doing
Dude,
that
you
for
look
a movie.
Like you're from ZZ Top.
That's for a
no,
movie.
No, he kind of digs the beard, I can tell.
Yeah,
he told me he's sober. He's been sober. The last time I saw him, we went drinking and smoking cigars. I was with him for 3 hours. This was about 4 years ago. I got home. My wife, who is Jewish, said, oh, you're with Mel Gibson for 3 hours. Did you mention that you're married to a Jewish woman? If I'd only had 3 hours and 5 minutes, it would have come up in conversation. So, of course, I see him this time, and, of course, I get home, and my wife is like, oh, did you mention me? It didn't come up. But what did come up is he's cleaned up. He's sober. He wants.
But you're not answering my question.
Well,
my
I do. I am. I'm telling you. Okay. He wants to be accepted, and he wants to believe that everything in his past is in his past, which it's not. People still ask about it. I don't think he's going to win an Oscar, but I think they're going to do something for the movie, like the screenplay or something else, and it may get a nomination for Best Picture.
Bregoli, does Hollywood forgive Mel Gibson for sugar tits and the anti-Semitic comments and all this other stuff that he's been doing?
You know what? After Donald Trump, he's a lightweight.
But nobody's answering my question. Will Hollywood?
No, I said no.
No, okay. Probably not. They'll remember. They'll always come up.
I disagree.
Is it be like an Ilya Kazan thing? Like he'll get an award one day, and half the audience will sit down and boo, and like the other.
I think he's gotten an Oscar.
I think that Hollywood is a little bit more forgiving. I think that they can look past certain things. Clearly, there are a number of directors who
look at the Ilya Kazan lifetime
achievement.
Ilya Kazan
is great. But another thing that's important, I think, to mention here is Mel Gibson almost single-handedly regenerated the whole faith-based film movement. You know, after the Passion of Christ,
it's the Passion of the Christ.
But, well, that was Scorsese's right, Last Temptation. Right. But I'm just saying,
is it the Passion of the Christ or is it the Passion
of Christ?
The Christ. The
Passion. He's drunk on Dayquil, ladies and gentlemen.
Neil
Rosen.
I told you, I had a bad cold.
Yeah. I think that this is reestablishing his dominance in this area of making faith-based film that is completely entertaining.
I agree, but this is not a Christian film, I don't think.
That's what I'm saying. It's not a Christian film.
All right,
It's been called a Christian film. Don't tell me the last shot of the movie.
Come on. One of the last shots.
Spoiler alert.
The butler.
When they're...
The butler.
All right.
Come
at
on,
one point...
Come on.
At one point, a stretcher is being lifted.
There's a sled. Do you know what that sled is?
All right. There's a stretcher.
Rosebud.
There's a stretcher, and the stretcher is being lifted up. It's like Christ's ascension after the crucifixion.
I didn't quite get that. That's what I was getting.
To me, there was religious symbolism.
Thank you, Oliver Stone.
I was okay with it.
Thanks for that spirit.
You all love the movie.
I liked it a lot.
All right, let's move on. And on the same theme of wartime movies, although this one takes place in the Iraq War. During the Iraq War, and actually both in Iraq and back here in America, there's a movie by Ang Lee. If you don't know who Ang Lee is, the director, he directed such things as Brokeback Mountain, Sense and Sensibility, Taking Woodstock.
Ice Storm, Crouching Tiger, Dragon, blah, blah, blah. Eat, Drink, Man, Woman.
Life of Pi, we can go on and on. All right, so anyway.
We usually do. What stops us this time? Oh, it's the cold.
2004. And Billy Lynn is this wartime hero who just returned from Iraq. And basically the movie takes place, the unit that he's with, they're on kind of a victory tour. And they're going to appear in the Dallas Cowboys football game halftime show with Destiny's Child featuring Beyonce.
Is it really the Cowboys? Don't they call them like the Mavericks or something?
It's the Dallas Cowboys. It is so blatantly the Dallas
Cowboys.
Yeah, okay,
Cowboys. Fine. Yeah.
It's not even... So anyway, and as they prepare to go on do the show, the flashbacks unfold of like what, you know, Billy is being hailed as a hero, but we get to see what really happened during, actually, one part of the hero thing is in this modern day of technology, what he did was sort of captured on somebody's cell phone. But we get to see what really happened, and we kind of see as the horrors of Iraq and the horrors of being, you know, how America is treating them. You know, everybody wants a piece of these guys. They got an agent played by Chris Tucker who wants to sell the movie rights. They got the football team owner played by Steve Martin, who I think is totally wasted in the role. He's kind of like trying
miscast.
To, like, you know, bilk them out of money he might buy the film rights, and he's kind of like full of shit. You know, and Vin Diesel's seen in flashbacks as the sergeant, which is very kind of a weird role. Before they go to battle, he just goes to every soldier.
I love you.
I love you. Yeah, hoo-ha, Sergeant. I love you. I mean, it's this thing. And then last but not least, there's a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader who Billy Lynn starts flirting with, who's on the other side of the room,
hot.
Basically.
Amazing,
very hot.
And she's kind of like a Christian fundamental,
buzzkill
Christian thing.
Fundamentalist Christian.
That's Christian buzzkill. That's a good name for a band. Christian buzzkill.
How about Buzzcut for the name of the band?
Like that.
And they all have buzzcuts. Well, anyway, I found that nothing was really developed here. I mean, the subplot with him and the Dallas Cowboy cheerleader is kind of not really fully developed. The PTSD that Billy is suffering from is also not, you know, fully, examined here to the extent it's not fleshed out enough. You know, many
Kristen
of the
Stewart is good, who Kristen you didn't Stewart mention as the sister.
The sister. She's in the movie.
She
for
redeems
maybe a
herself.
Grand total
I mean,
of
she,
10 minutes.
Well,
yeah.
She's always good in the supporting role.
I thought Billy's squad was stereotypes. You know, you got your Latin guy.
But I don't think we can have this conversation without explaining what I think drew Ang Lee to the whole thing in the first place, which is that he got to shoot it in 3D, 4K, 120 frames per second.
But we didn't see it that way.
Right.
They didn't show it to us that way.
And in fact, critics who've seen it both ways much prefer the 2D, ordinary way that we saw it, which should tell you that this was a failed experiment. That's all there is to it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think that this film is experimental in a lot of ways, not only in the technology. He's also experimenting with creating a character through a very fractured narrative. So we're really seeing pieces of Billy, and Billy's trying to put himself back together. And I think that the fractured narrative is mirroring what's happening. Like, we're disjointed. We don't really know, you know, where the story's going.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I think
it doesn't make it worth watching.
Well, no, but I think you're reading more into it than there is. I mean, it's like,
that's just my take.
I thought the halftime scene, I took my 16-year-old daughter Lily, who was very disappointed that Beyonce's butt wasn't the correct size. Mm. They have this Beyonce
stand-in. It's a Beyonce stunt double.
And
could have put some padding in there.
Yeah, it needed to be larger. So that was a disappointment. But also just, and I like I have to tell you, the centerpiece of the movie, which is this halftime show, I think is really amazing. I think that's really, really well done.
I'd like to see that.
But I kept thinking of a movie like Smile. Do you guys remember Smile?
Yeah,
Michael Richards from way back? And things like that were these slices of Americana. It so reminded me of Nashville and the Altman movie and how
if
this had been as good as that, this would be like one of Ang Lee's greatest movies.
You know, it failed to pull me in emotionally. Yes, that halftime show sequence is really well filmed, and God knows what that looks like in 3D and at the 120 frame rate that you're talking about. But I was just not, I didn't, you know, I didn't, there were so many different stories going on here that I just didn't really care. And it's not like there was this big reveal when you go back to Iraq and, you know, it wasn't like, oh, that's what, it was like I kind of was told in the beginning of the movie, this is what happened. I mean, it's kind of like looking at, you know, how they're being treated back home.
But Neil's story was secondary. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Well, I agree with you. I think story
was
secondary.
It was a technical exercise.
But I didn't get to see the technical exercise because...
I know, so you're pissed, aren't you?
Because Sony Pictures...
You want to pick up a gun now and shoot everyone.
No, Sony Pictures decided in their infinite wisdom to show it to us in 2D.
No, I know, because there are only five... Because there are only five... I just want to make this point. There are only five theaters in America that are going to show it that way.
Right. And that
when Ang Lee was shooting it, he thought the studio was going to get the money up to put that technology in a lot more. Did you know this story, the whole backstory?
I did not.
He thought they were going to be so excited. He made $500 million for them from Life of Pi and talked them into doing that in 3D and some other special kind of shooting methodology that escapes me at the moment. But he had the ticket. He had the gold key. They would do whatever and he thought that he was going to deliver a movie that would make them go back and put these theater, retrofit these theaters.
That's because he didn't talk to Peter Jackson.
They didn't do it.
He didn't talk to Peter Jackson.
Well, I'm in a way, you know, I'm unhappy that I have not seen it in the technical way that Ang Lee wanted us to see it. But in a way, it's good that I didn't see it that way because I could judge it strictly as a movie.
Right.
And not,
which is where it falls flat for you. You're talking about it not having
a
story that engaged you.
No, it is not an engaging story.
Right.
I mean, it's not terrible. but it's kind of a mess. It's all over the place. There's all these different things. I mean, if you have a whole movie about Steve Martin as the football owner, I mean, that focus on that, that might have been interesting. If you have a whole movie on, you know, that cheerleader relationship, if that was or the Kristen Stewart relationship, Billy Lynn's sister, because they apparently are very close.
But that's what Mike's saying. It's a fractured story told from a lot of different viewpoints, and that's sort of interesting.
And I think it's a little, it's just definitely uneven, and it didn't quite gel the way you want it to. I thought that, you know, the sum of its parts did not equal,
That's correct.
That sums it up perfectly.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. I'm getting a phone call now. Hold on. This is important. Oh, speaking of being all over the place, this is a very pissed off Mel Gibson who says, "Didn't you interview me? And weren't you going to put me in the show?
We have some
in the last segment." I'm sorry, Mel. I'm sorry. We'll get right back to that.
Oh well. Should I do this?
No, we can do it.
Watch it.
We're live and we prove it every week.
All right, fine. So back to Hacksaw Ridge. I think Bill Bregoli talked to Mel Gibson.
I have sound. And first, let's start with Andrew Garfield, who talked about his character Desmond Doss's masculinity, of all things.
Mm. He was an incredibly strong man, but his strength didn't come from an ability to kill his fellow man. His strength came from his ability to stay true to himself and heal and love his fellow man. This isn't an example we often get to see as men.
And then I have Mel Gibson, and Mel basically talks about what drew him to Desmond Doss's story.
You got someone with faith and conviction going into hell itself, where the object is to kill one another, and men are reduced to the level of animals, and here's this man sort of honing his higher aspects and going into the same hell and saving lives.
Okay, Mel, are you happy now? Thank you.
And then you have the comment from Mel where he talks about why he hates Jews.
You know, before we got going, I did make the observation that there are usually in an Army movie, in a World War II movie, there's one guy in a unit named Shapiro or something. I did not bring that up. No.
Wasn't there a guy named Sugar Tits in the movie? You know, I want to ask you guys, jumping back to Billy Lynn, did you feel that the Vin Diesel scenes worked at all?
No.
I mean, what they wanted from Vin, like him being this sort of a magical realism kind of character, it didn't work for me.
That's another thing that wasn't fully developed. He had this kind of, this mysticism.
It just didn't work.
It's the all guy laid out. The guy you're supposed to be. On the battlefield, it's all planned.
And this
advance.
Is the man you're supposed to follow no matter what.
It wasn't. He's saying, it's all fatalistic. It's all determined beforehand.
Exactly.
So don't worry if you're going to live or die during this battle, because it's been predetermined so that it's out of your hands. That's just another thing.
Another actor could have pull that off.
Yeah, but there's another thing. Give me a movie more on the Vin Diesel. Okay. It's a fragment. You said it's a fragmented movie. The sum of its parts don't add up to a whole. And maybe if we saw it technically, but I think the technical thing would have worn off. I've seen movies that are really interesting technically, and after the microphone keeps dropping. And after after 10 minutes or so, it's like, okay, it's interesting, but now I got another 2 hours to go with this thing. So I don't know, but I can't comment on it because I haven't seen it. All right, moving on.
Tell us about a movie you have seen, Neil.
Okay. Well, let me talk about a couple of movies that are, if you're on demand, there are a couple of films that are coming right onto your television set. And they're on
DVD too.
The
most anticipated of which you would say is which?
Well, probably the most anticipated of which, not for me. There's two movies. One is Indignation, which I was really but I want to talk about Sausage Party
first.
Yeah,
that's what I think most people are looking for. That's what they're,
which is a
that's the deepest movie of the week.
R, bordering on it, although it got an R rating, almost bordering on NC-17.
Now they can get away with stuff in cartoons that they can't get away with.
Actually,
Mike,
why don't you tell us the plot of Sausage Party, the animated
plot, as it were,
the bawdy plot of
the premise. It's more of a premise than a plot. The premise is that all groceries in the grocery store live to be taken home because they've been fooled into thinking that they're going home. It's the promised land.
The great, are they called the Great Beyond?
The Great Beyond, something like that.
It's the island. Michael Bay made the same movie with human beings that look like vegetables.
To what they did in Toy Story with the creatures that want to be chosen, okay? And what happens here is that I think that, you know, there's also the joke that the sausage packs are near the buns, and they want to get inside the bun, and that's what they live for, and the buns want the sausage inside them. And so the sexual innuendo is there.
Wait, I don't follow. Let me see. The sausage is... I don't...
That's why you only have one kid.
Exactly. But so the premise is that they find out throughout this adventure where they almost go to the promised land that everything is not what it seemed, that we're the evil food-eating humans, and they're not going to the promised land. They're going into our stomach. So that, of course, is, you know, a fun premise.
You know what?
It's a very deep. This movie is about mortality.
It's basically
deeper,
well,
it's deeper about than religion. Billy Lynn's world. Yeah.
It's also about it tackles a lot of subjects, particularly religion, and it makes its point early on about that. And I think it keeps hammering the same point over and over again. But
you guys saw This Is the End.
It's overly ambitious.
It's kind of a cartoon version of This Is the End.
Yeah.
It kind of.
This is a theme that Rogan goes back to a lot.
Heels above that. Well, I mean, I think that Rogan and his boy, they often
Evan Goldberg,
they often deal with similar themes. You know, if you see the TV series Preacher, they're also dealing with similar themes, you know, and which is probably why they love the comic.
The problem is this is one joke just beaten into the grocery store floor.
There are two jokes.
Yeah, two. Okay,
well,
two jokes.
You know, I mean, how many jokes about, you know, sausages trying to stick it into buns are you going to have in this movie?
I'm sure you're 11, you couldn't have enough.
I was just going to say, it's puerile and
there are ethnic stereotypes.
I have a friend who constantly makes dirty jokes, constantly joking. He loved this movie.
Mike, you mentioned something on the TV show today. And again, as we say every week, this is an after show to a television show we do called Talking Pictures, which airs locally on New York One and nationally on Time Warner Cable.
This is when we have the cocktails.
Right. And as we say every week on the show, Bill McCuddy says,
we watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
Right. And I don't think this is necessarily a bad movie. I just think it's a redundant movie. I think that it's not as clever as it thinks it is.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's, you know, at times it's just raunchy, which I don't mind, you know, if it's funny. But it's just sometimes it's just raunchy for the sake of raunchy. I mean,
you could watch a Red Band trailer of this. In other words, get the whole movie.
Absolutely.
And there are characters who come in towards the last half who are somewhat fun, but everything wears quickly.
Bill McCuddy liked Selma Hayek as the lesbian taco.
I thought that was very funny.
Partial to lesbian tacos, from what I've heard.
But
Best friends.
Well, it's a good voice cast. I mean, you got Edward Norton doing a Woody Allen imitation. You know, and you got Jonah Hill and Kristen Wiig, and of course you got James Franco. It's the Seth Rogen crew. But I think, you know, when you made a comment, Mike, about how you maybe you'd have liked it better if you were stoned.
Absolutely.
And I think
I'm trying to imagine.
Sony was smart enough to ply a group that I was with wine and beer,
but no joints
and sausages. No joints, But we were all quite lubricated before.
Well, you
before,
get the
so.
Requisite, any Seth Rogen movie that he wrote, you're going to get the requisite stoner humor. But yeah, I mean, maybe it is funnier if you're 18
I'm still wrestling with the fact that Mike Sargent went to a movie not stoned.
I think if you're 17 or 16 and you're a stoned high school kid and you go to see this, you probably would find it a lot funnier than me, the straight adult who just went in there and I'm like, yeah, I get it after 10 minutes.
Did any of us see it with an audience? Did you see it with an audience?
I did see it with an audience.
I did not.
And did it play well in the room? Because I'm always interested in that about comedy.
The audience was somewhat divided. There are some people, and I'd say probably a third of the audience was guffawing. The other two thirds of the audience were sitting there, mildly bemused, right, as I was.
Well, that's not good. Well, that's why I didn't make a ton of money.
There's an orgy at the end of this thing, which is just like I had it at that point, where all the food starts having an orgy with each other.
It's like
I had
had
it by that point. I was. How about you, Bill?
I don't know. I kind of stuck with it, but I had a lot of wine before I saw the movie.
Maybe that's
kind of
the key.
You know, Sony is
like at a party.
Sony stoner guy making a stoner movie for stoner.
You don't
Sony's
know that there wasn't weed in that pizza.
I don't know.
Oh, I know that.
And
I know
you know
that.
What? I'm also wondering if in the future, when pot is legalized, will the movie companies be getting a stone before we go see movies instead of just drunk?
I don't know. All right, let's move on.
Is that how they're going to market films in
Colorado?
Let's
smoke some junk at this junket.
Let's move on to a movie called Indignation. Now, this was the movie that I was really eagerly awaiting to see because, I don't know. First of all, I interviewed this kid who stars in it, Logan Lerman, for this Percy Jackson movie, along with Pierce Brosnan, you know, in that the first thing. And, you know, all of a sudden he's playing this, you know, he was a kid, and now he's like, you know, he's an adult.
He was in the Brad Pitt Tank movie, too.
the Brad Pitt tank.
Oh, yeah. Well, Fury?
Yeah, Fury. Yeah. He was in Fury.
He's
very good in Fury.
He's a very good actor. He's a very good actor.
Well, this is all on his shoulders. Those movies are all, you know, this is him.
It's based on a Philip Roth novel, and it takes place in 1951. And Logan Lerman plays this Jewish kid from New Jersey whose father's a kosher butcher, and he gets this – I think it's a scholarship. Did he get a scholarship?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
To attend this predominantly non-Jewish, although there are a few token Jews in the university.
Mostly Catholic.
There's two. Well, I'm sorry. There's
I believe it's in Ohio. And, you know, where he, A, faces anti-Semitism.
Ohio, how are you going to keep kosher? Once somebody says to him at the beginning.
Right, where he faces anti-Semitism. And he also starts up a relationship with this girl that, you know, with the Shiksa girl, who's kind of crazy. And
those are the best ones.
And it's kind of there's the, I got to tell you, and it's good because
there's a woman from the Junkets. If I could name a
television show, because in the movie, and it's 1951, and he borrows his roommate's car, and he takes her out on a date, and he gets home from the date, and he doesn't ask for this to happen. But the woman administers.
This is Philip Roth. Philip Roth's so obsessed with sex. This is like.
Right. So the woman gives him head, basically. Okay.
It's and a coming of age movie.
And you got to realize how times coming of age is. The have times have changed because he's like, her parents must have been divorced for her to like do this. Why would she do this? Well, you know, she's like, you think I'm a slut because I did it? It's like. Half the movie is
that's Philip Roth.
It's
Jewish guilt. Every Philip Roth
book is that. He cannot understand
Portnoy's
what
complaint.
Like
Portnoy's
would do
complaint.
What he considered to be, although he enjoyed it immensely, what he considers to be a vile act. Man, if times have changed.
Like she's great.
Guilt. She felt guilty, so he projected it onto her. Isn't that kind of a thing?
Who's the girl?
I thought she was amazing. She was in that crazy movie, Map of the Stars.
She was
the mother of
Map of the Stars.
Yeah, the Cronenberg movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Crazy Cronenberg movie.
She was also in The Girl King, and she was very good in that too.
Yeah, she's kind of really great in this. This is his. Let me go out on a limb and see if you. This is his graduate. This is like a Dustin Hoffman performance in that. This is like he carries the whole movie.
I have problems with the movie. And I'll tell you my big problem with the movie, which is more – first, here's what I liked about the movie. He has these – I don't know what you'd call them. The best scenes in the movie are these verbal sparring matches that he has with the dean of the school, played by Tracy Letts, who's also in real life a playwright.
Wrote
August Osage County. But he's an actor in tons of things. And they have these, like, as you were saying, McCuddy, on the show, they have these six-minute – I mean,
scenes that go longer than would ever happen in most movies nowadays.
Matches, like the dean will say something and the kid will counteract it, and then it goes back and forth and back and
almost
forth.
Almost theatrical.
Yeah.
It is almost theatrical. And those were interesting, but, you know, the problem I had with the movie is, and it's again, this might go back to the source material from Philip Roth, is that the main character, he's this over-intellectualized protagonist who's hard to root for. Because he's annoying.
But you could say that about any Woody Allen film.
Yeah.
I like Woody Allen.
Yeah, but he's got intellectual protagonists that are.
I don't know. He was just this argumentative kid. I don't know.
Woody Allen?
I don't know.
He was consumed by guilt.
I was like, why are you even arguing with this dean? Why don't you just play along with it? But
can we also say something about the mom? There's a great scene.
The mom was very good. The mom was very good.
Where they make this bargain. Great scene. Some really good work.
Yes, the mom comes towards the end of the movie to visit him and has some disturbing news. And yes, it's not a terrible movie. I'm mixed on it, but you know,
I think for
the great James Sheamus director,
first directorial
didn't live
film.
Up to my expectation. I was really excited to see this film. I was high on it before I saw. I was like, this is going to be great.
Like Sausage Party High?
No, I was not like Sausage Party High. I was not literally high. I was high, excited, high. Like, I was excited about
natural
it.
Natural high.
Natural
Well, high. Wow. What a show. And what are we talking about next
right,
week?
Well, anyway, anybody want to talk about Arrival?
Sure.
Tell me about Arrival.
I have not seen that.
I have not seen it.
Well, let's wait until you guys to see it.
All right, okay.
Yeah. No, I hear it's a huge head-scratcher.
Ten-word review, Bill.
Give me a minute review.
Yeah. Aliens come. Jeremy Renner and Amy Adams are told to decipher what it is they're talking about. And
like Close Encounters.
Right. So the
ding, 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 ding.
Right. Only there are these seven-legged creatures that
use sign language or hand.
Yeah,
signs?
They
use crab language.
They kind of like spray out this message.
Rorschach.
Yeah, this Rorschach. Everything's very circular. They have to figure out what it is. And there's a thing with Amy Adams' past, or is it the future? Is time linear?
Like, what do you call those things?
Is it like Inception?
It's sort of contact meets inception, but they're small, not like corn mazes.
There was a word for it where people thought that
crop circles.
Yeah,
like crop circles.
Not really. No, they're smaller.
Nothing like crop circles.
No.
Okay.
So I asked, is it like Inception?
No, I'd say it's like Contact meets Inception.
Is it boring?
It's interesting.
Is it would you recommend it?
Interesting is boring.
Yeah, I'd still recommend it. It's still there's not. Even though there's a military involved, not as much fighting and shooting as you might expect in an Alien Reaches Earth movie.
It's one of the things that I've gotten, cerebral. Without giving too much away from the trailer that I think everyone has seen, is that Amy Adams thinks they're saying one thing and other people think they're saying something else.
Oh, that's a big part of it. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
So I get
that
it.
Sounds like this Twilight Zone episode called To Serve Mankind.
Yeah, To Serve Man. To Serve
everybody
man.
Thinks
right, that the aliens
that,
are...
That, it, that the book is, oh, To Serve Man. They're all relieved. The aliens came down.
Oh, yeah.
we can't decipher the inside of the book because it's kind of like cursive as opposed to print. You know, but the title, we got the title, To Serve Man. Oh, so they're all relieved. It's going to be great. Right. Here on a totally...
Right.
Good intentioned.
And they're going to leave and go.
Right. And it's a cookbook.
Get on a honey.
Classic.
Don't get on the spaceship to serve man. It's a cookbook.
It's a similar connection.
Eat up, Mr. Williams. Eat up.
Soylent Green is people. It's people.
It's people. There you go. Next week on the show, we're going to do Manchester by the Sea, an animated film where Casey Affleck plays.
Not
animated.
Animated.
It's a very serious drama.
Under the Manage.
That will be a contender for Best Picture. You know, we could probably tell you the contenders right now will be La La Land and Manchester by the Sea and
Hacksaw Ridge, maybe.
Fences
will definitely. I can guarantee you those three will be nominated for Best Picture. Hacksaw Ridge might be
definitely will be
hindered
nominated.
By the
There's
fact that it's Mel Gibson.
Now. 10 pictures to be nominated. So.
Will Sully be nominated for Best Picture?
I think
will that be their big commercial?
And I think people love Clint. I think it'll be nominated.
Yeah.
It'll be nominated just to let Clint know.
He's like a Merrill Automatic.
Right, Merrill Automatic. He won't win because he's not that good. But he'll
Merrill Automatic. Although Merrill didn't get nominated for that shitty
whose
movie
year
where
it
she
is.
Played the rock star.
Well, she'll get this year for Florence Jenkins, maybe.
No. What's her name?
That movie died on a blind.
Got to beat her. Warren Beatty's wife.
Annette Bening.
This is her year.
20th Century Women is great.
I didn't realize how popular Annette Bening is. I put up a picture of me.
20th Century Women?
Yeah, 20th Century Women. That's going to win her the Oscar.
But that's not the Warren Beatty film.
No, that's Rules Don't Apply.
That's the good film. Right.
Which we didn't even talk about. We went to the lunch this week.
That's true. We went to see Rules Don't Apply. Can we talk about it yet? Isn't it a
We'll talk about it next time.
We're going to wait.
Funny lunch.
The Rules Don't Apply or 20th Century Women?
20th Century Women. Because Annette Bening, I put up a picture of me and Warren Beatty. I got maybe 100 likes. I put up a picture of me with Annette Bening. I got 250 likes.
Well, the kids are
already. 250 friends.
Don't tell Warren.
She's great in Bugsy. What's that jerky soda one?
Yeah, go outside and jerk me a soda.
Right. She's great and the kids are all right.
She's great in The Grifters. Do you want the rent or do you want this?
Annette Bening's great.
And American...
Beauty.
American Beauty.
Oh, she's
her
great in that.
Scene
oh,
that.
With the, with the,
fantastic.
The garden gloves match the dress.
Busted.
Yeah, that's great. American Beauty is
her time is coming.
American Beauty is a beauty of a film.
It
that's
is
a master
film. It is. It
masterpiece.
Is.
Of a film.
Oh, and on that note,
Bill, what do
and
you
on
say?
That
you
note,
you want to say something, Bill?
No,
I can see.
We want Neil to go home and just heal, Neil.
Get over the cold.
Feel better, Neil.
All right. So for Bill Bregoli,
yes, sir.
Mike Sargent,
yes.
Yes.
I said yes.
Oh, yes. Okay. And Bill McCuddy.
We're going to boil Neil's microphone now.
Everybody gets sick in this place because if one person has a cold.
It's like a petri dish in this room. We should really tell people.
And I'm Neil Rosen, and thanks for sitting around talking movies with us, and we'll sit around talking movies with you next week. Have a good week. Bye.